Hello and welcome to Who Are You? We're the Babylon 5 Watchcast by a couple of former strangers, now friends, who are still getting to know each other over one of their favorite shows from their childhood, Babylon 5. I'm Laura.
And I'm Jafar.
Good morning, Jafar.
Good morning, Laura.
It's early for us.
It's early for us to record. It's too early for me to be awake. And
right.
It is 11:30 local, and I can't sleep past 6:30 in the morning most days.
Mm-hmm.
And it is too early for me. Yesterday was my best friend's 40th birthday party.
Woo-hoo. Congrats.
Which
Happy
was a grand
birthday.
Old time. Yeah. It's funny because I was actually talking to his wife about this podcast because she's a big J. Michael Straczynski fan.
Oh, yay.
Solely from his Thor comics.
Wow.
And didn't know anything else he had done. She's
that
a
feels
huge
a little
Thor nerd.
Like obscure. I mean, not super obscure because he's obviously a prolific comic writer, but it's very specific.
Yeah. That's just like her vibe. Like, I feel like every couple of years, he needs help picking out a present for her for a birthday or anniversary or something. And he'll ask me, and I will take him to, like, a cool, kitschy nerd store, and we will find the coolest Thor-related thing, and that is always the perfect gift.
Yeah.
She is a huge Thor fan. And JMS's arc in Thor is her favorite.
Uh-huh.
And so when I was all like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I was talking about we were talking about what comics we're reading right now, and I had mentioned I'm reading J. Michael Straczynski's Captain America run, which is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to an entire conversation where it's all like, I didn't know he did anything besides Thor. And I'm all like, did you know about his TV show? And she's all
like,
and
I mean, this isn't like, I mean, this is his TV show, but he also wrote for several prominent TV shows.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, he was a big part of Sense8.
Uh-huh.
Which is very easy to watch on Netflix, I think, still.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the animated stuff and then the early 80s stuff. So, yeah.
Did you convert us a new listener watcher?
She is not big on the sci-fi, which is fun because she loves Thor. But I was just kind of like selling it from a like, because she was talking about the stuff she liked about it. And it's all like, he's so good at planting seeds and then picking them up like 20 issues later. And I'm all like, well, he invented the 5-year arc of television. So let me tell you about how he does it over there, because you'll appreciate the same shit.
Yeah, for real.
Yeah.
It's worth a shot. Hopefully she comes upon us one day.
Maybe. That'd be fun. You know, I mean, it'll probably be me providing copies of Babylon 5 for her to watch anyways, if that's the case.
Uh-huh.
But right now, I'm just going to lend her the Captain America comics and just try to get her hooked on one some more of that sweet, sweet JMS.
Mm-hmm. That's how it starts. You have your gateway drug, whatever it is, of JMS, and then you just go further in.
Mm-hmm. Deeper down the rabbit hole until she finds out that She-Ra is his creation, and then it's all over from there.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I'm exhausted. I did not drink or partake of anything in particular.
Yeah.
But I had had the smoker running from 3 p.m. 2 days ago until 3 p.m. yesterday.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot of work.
And that can be a lot of work. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a lot of sleep. Lots of checking on things. Lots of making sure stuff is going. This is easily the most I have ever smoked in one go.
Dang.
I smoked 20 pounds of onions.
Uh-huh. I saw the pictures.
To make onion jam, which, smoked onion jam. It's lit. If anyone's interested, remind me. I'll put the recipe up in the Discord. And then I did a 20-pound brisket. I did 3 racks of ribs. I did 3 or 4 pounds of salmon. And I did about, I want to say, 6 or 7 pounds of chicken wings.
Nice.
It was a lot. I have I have a whiteboard in my kitchen that is normally a, like, upcoming calendar of social things to be aware of for the next, like, 2 months. So, you know, like, date thing, sometimes location if it involves travel. Just like, you know, like, hey, is there anything going on this day? Quick reference.
Mm-hmm.
It has been replaced with a hour by hour of all of the smoking and when things need to happen and when things need to get checked and wrapped and rotated and everything.
It sounds like you smoked a lot of things, but did you smoke 1 billion souls on a planet?
Yes, we're here to talk about Babylon 5, River of Souls.
Pretty sure it was a billion souls, right? It was a lot.
It was a significant, the death of one is a tragedy, the death of millions is a statistic, is mm-hmm. something a very shitty person once said. So, what's a billion there? Mm-hmm. Does it circle back?
Mm-hmm. A billion is apparently one hazy ball, is what it is. We should explain the hazy ball when we get there, but yeah. So River of Souls opens on some unknown planet. I think it gets a name later. It's like an archaeological site. Oh, maybe this planet doesn't get a name. Maybe it's the planet of the billion souls gets a name.
Yeah. The planet of the billion souls for sure gets a name.
Yeah. We have archaeologists, and we have a head archaeologist that you can tell is the head archaeologist because he has like a vaguely British accent.
Yeah, this is Ian McShane.
Yeah, very cool.
Digging this archaeological dig. Aziz Light!
Yeah, I think when we were setting up River of Souls, mm-hmm. I don't remember if it was on pod or off pod or a discussion with a guest, but I remember somebody saying that Martin Sheen was given the script for a different role, but he wanted to be the soul hunter.
I think that was in our Discord. Okay. And I think Ryan from Yum Yum, I believe, is the one who told us that, because I also remember reading that and going, of fucking course.
Okay.
So that would have been, Martin Sheen would have been playing this Ian McShane role initially.
I would much rather have him play Ian McShane was great, but if we have to have Martin Sheen in something, I would have rather had him in this.
I don't think you get Martin Sheen on a made-for-TV movie on TNT. Uh-huh. This would have been during The West Wing or right before The West Wing, which is like a full-on renaissance for his career. Uh-huh. And I don't think you get to dictate terms with him.
Yeah, I get it, but... Wow.
He's there because he wants to be, not because he needs to be.
Sure.
And he does do lots of fun sci-fi stuff, and he's always had a, enjoyed the genre mm-hmm. and things. So I get it. This is the equivalent of sometimes you get someone way too famous on Star Trek.
Yes.
It's the same shit.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that. But yeah, Martin Sheen, when I was like, I remember talking to Ben because he had not watched any of the movies because they weren't on Max or readily available streaming mm-hmm. On the services he was consuming Babylon 5 on.
Yeah, we had to buy them on Apple TV or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're not on Vudu, which is what I used to watch the show. And they weren't on Max, so he just had no way of seeing them. And I was all like, yeah, you know, the one with Martin Sheen. And he's all like, excuse me.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
And Ben has seen some weird, obscure stuff. I'm sad for him that he hadn't seen this.
So I hope he has by now.
Yeah.
Because I had to get everything and add it to my stuff. So I know he's got access to it now. Mm-hmm. Whether or not he's taken the time to realize he has access to it. Maybe this is what gets him to watch it. That'd be fun.
Yeah, sure. Anyway, Ian McShane, good job.
Ian McShane.
Dr. Bryson is his character.
Yeah, he thinks he's found the key to immortality in a sealed chamber that's like too big to have been missed, right?
Uh-huh.
in Jurassic Park, because we watched Jurassic Park because yesterday's 40th birthday was dinosaur themed because he's a dinosaur now.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was fun. Good idea. But we watched Jurassic Park, and they're using sonar to detect where dinosaur bones are in Jurassic Park. Talking about this new technology. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just all like, how in a movie made 10 years later, set hundreds of years later, do they not know exactly where this thing is?
Right, exactly. With their spaceships and their whatnot.
Right. And when they get in, this giant beacon is launched out of the top. Like, you could have just gone through the top this entire time. I don't know what's going on here exactly. I don't understand how you have so much stuff on the surface and everyone's like, what's this giant chamber?
Yeah, where is it? We can't find it. Yeah. They find some kind of lock. They get themselves in, even though everybody's like, you know, his team is all fussing about wanting to just like give up.
Yeah.
And the vault launches something. And because we've seen the original Soul Hunter, we can kind of figure out pretty quick that this is like a soul vault. There's all those glowing balls all around.
Yeah, those aren't accent lights. Those are souls.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would love some of these for my basement.
Yeah,
like
they
really cast a nice ambient light. I think that it'd be a very nice way to decorate a couple of rooms in the house.
Yeah. You're going to have to figure out the like drippy tube stuff that the Soul Hunter had and take a few souls and get a nice little ambiance going.
Yeah, building a soul capturing machine is definitely the easiest route to getting some of these.
Definitely,
not just
right?
Putting LEDs in some plastic. But yeah, Mr. Wednesday sees this giant orb and grabs it as he's running out.
Yeah, it's like a big soul ball. It's not just the little soul ball. And it's like pulsing, glowing. So extra sinister.
Yeah, these globes are not one soul fits all. So this is a big guy here.
Yeah, and the like automated drone system has launched, looking to protect the soul vault. His team is like trying to get away, and he starts talking to this basketball of souls like totally normal guy.
Totally legit. And then we cut over to Babylon 5, and we get a really great long take with Lockley and Corwin talking about all the trouble that left with Sheridan and Garibaldi. Just like, man, when those guys were around, it really seemed like Wednesdays were always crazy for no particular reason. And now that they're gone, it's been real quiet.
Yeah. I really like Lockley Corwin buddy duo. Like, I want more of this.
Yes. Another comment from the Discord was that it's a glimpse of what the show could have looked like after everyone left. Mm-hmm. And Lockley was just in charge of the station without Sheridan shitting on everything all the time. Mm-hmm. And I want that show. I wish we had gotten that instead of Crusade, probably.
Yeah. Crusade at least needed to do this, right? Needed to go to the station, and we needed to see these awesome times of our buds having fun.
Yeah. Garibaldi's back, which means trouble is back on the station.
Boo.
And it starts almost immediately.
And then we go to the grossest scene. Not the grossest scene, but the grossest idea on Babylon 5.
The hollow brothel.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Like, I have a lot of feelings about the hollow brothel. I hope that I am mentally put together enough to express them right now.
Right, sure. The hollow brothel is so complicated.
Well, I think it's a really good B story for this movie. Because, I mean, besides the, like, they tie it in at the end with the plot stuff. Really, this movie is about having your identity taken against your will.
Yeah.
And that happens in the A plot and the B plot.
Yeah.
And it happens in very different ways and to very different groups of people for very different reasons. But it is the same experience, effectively. And so I thought that was a really nice touch, because when you're tackling something that is heavy and you're tackling something that can be kind of silly, and to be clear, the hollow brothel is heavy and the soul orbs are silly, just so that no one thinks I'm getting that backwards. It's a good way to do that, because you're coming at it from two angles and you're approaching it in a way that allows it to be comprehended by people who might not understand which one is silly and which one is heavy.
Yeah, yeah. It is pretty smart.
So it kind of forces people to think about it in a way that they might not otherwise.
Uh-huh.
And when we talk about the hollow brothel plot in those lines and those lines only, it's good. And the second we actually talk about any of it, it's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. The hollow brothel suits also provide some levity, because they are silly as hell. Like,
mm-hmm.
The whole idea is really kind of monstrous. And DS9 actually tackled this like very briefly in one episode where Major Kira's likeness is taken because someone wants it for a hollow program to do mm-hmm. nasty things to Major Kira. And there's a that's tackled in that episode just a little bit. You kind of have to throw in a little bit of levity. And so the suits look ridiculous.
They're absurd.
Yeah.
Hundo.
Okay. So the hollow brothel is apparently somewhere in Brown Sector, maybe?
It's down below. I mean, Brown Sector has to be down below, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a poop joke.
100 and something episodes and Jafar gets it finally.
Finally. Finally.
Yeah. Well, and did you catch the magazine that the hollow brothel owner is reading at his desk?
No, I did not.
Literally called Lecherous Magazine. I don't know if they just didn't expect it to quite pick up or they were, you know, wanting to make it extremely silly. But yeah, he's reading Lecherous.
My copy of this movie that I watched was going through some HD upscaling that was really putting it through the ringer.
Okay.
It is like, so Third Space was so lo-fi that it was almost unwatchable.
Oh, it's terrible, yeah.
And so I tried to find some like fan upscaled versions of the films to watch.
Uh-huh.
And I posted a picture in the Discord. There's so much smoothing on Martin Sheen's face when he shows up as the Soul Hunter that I thought it was Emilio Estevez. He looks 25, 30.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's about to go be the president, so I know he's not.
He's got a lot of loaf on in general, and I imagine whatever stuff algorithms were trying to do to that or whatever made it pretty bad. Yeah.
And then there were some scenes where Ian McShane looked like he was 90. Like it took it the other way.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. It was weird.
Hmm.
I would not recommend it, so... That's why I didn't anywhere else, but while we're talking about it.
I don't even remember what happens in this scene. We just established that the hollow brothel is a thing and it has suits.
Oh, yeah. We're there for like 5 seconds.
Like nasty owner involved. That's all I remember.
I have half of a line of notes from this scene. Garibaldi's on the station. And he's here as a waypoint to meet a researcher that is on the Edgar's Industries payroll. And it's the aforementioned Dr. Bryson, Ian McShane.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about how his specialty field was using pollen to date bodies instead of carbon because carbon values are different on every planet. That is... chemically impossible. Like, I am not an expert in this field, but I know that carbon dating uses, I think it's carbon 14 isotope and its half-life to determine how old something is by how much is degraded, right? And so if that's the case, carbon 14 isotope is going to be the same on every fucking planet.
Why would
it's going to degrade
have...
at the same rate? It's a constant.
And ignoring that, why would we have pollen on every planet?
Why would hoping that something dead happens to have pollen on it? And also pollen is going to change plant to plant and be incredibly different every time.
Yeah.
So it's wrong both ways. No.
So weird. I do like
this plot. It's wrong both ways.
I do like that. Lockley knows exactly what he's talking about, can talk shop on this, and makes Garibaldi feel silly. That's really good.
Mm-hmm. Garibaldi and Bryson go to dinner to talk about Project L.E., which is all Edgar's had put in his notes. And we get some flourishing. Oh, well, he probably called it life extension, but I like to refer to it as life eternal.
I was like, yeah, okay. Jerk off motion.
Right. Which is basically what Garibaldi does here. Alfredo wants something to justify the millions of dollars he's been paid over the last few years.
Uh-huh.
And he's all like, well, I just found this new thing and I need time to. It's all like, so you've wasted money for the last several years doing nothing?
Yeah.
You've got nothing to show for years of work?
Yeah.
You just found it? He's ready to pull the plug on this project. Bryson goes on a tirade about needing to eat the dead to live being cyclical. Like, oh, yeah. Well, living things eat dead things to live more. And this is exactly the thing that, like, 14-year-old me would be all like, whoa! And 30-year-old me's like, who gives a fuck?
That had the double deuces attached to it, since this is an audio medium.
Yeah.
I'll let everyone know.
Yeah, it's just like, this is something that someone thought was mentally impressive that is totally bland and boring and a fact of life. This is no different than saying, you're alive, you're going to die one day.
Yeah.
Like, it's all like, yeah, that's kind of the point in some ways. Like,
it's the circle of life.
I just had absolutely no patience for this whatsoever.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't have a lot of patience for Bryson. Babylon 5 really likes the, like, scientist obsessed with conquering death. And
they
I don't know. We've seen it so many times. I'm just like, okay, I roll.
We got it.
Yeah.
Immortality. Just wait. The Vorlons aren't here to say not ready yet. So let's go for it this time.
Yeah. It's like,
all right. Do you think Martin Sheen could have done this speech better than Ian McShane?
Oh,
in a way
I don't
where it would have felt impactful? Or do you think it's just bad all around?
Hard to say.
I think, you know what makes this movie worse? Having just watched Objects in Motion, Objects at Rest, and Sleeping in Light.
Yeah.
That is not the intended viewing order. That's like the chronological order.
Yeah, yeah.
This is, but we were supposed to watch this, I think. Or no, it must have been after the series finished up, but.
Yeah, because they're all gone. Yeah.
Yeah, maybe not so close to it, because we get like some of the best Jakar, like flourishy speeches in Objects in Motion, and going from that to this, you're just like, I know you can do better.
I do think this is supposed to be a little cringe, though, because
the
scientist is not supposed to be a totally sympathetic character. Like,
fair.
He's a weirdo. I think we're supposed to feel like he's a weirdo. If we're supposed to be sympathetic to him, I missed that entirely.
Fair.
So we go to Lockley's office, where someone comes in to complain about the hollow brothel. Specifically, not that the hollow brothel exists or that this is a weird idea and it makes everyone uncomfortable. No, the equipment is not safe.
Yep, I got electrocuted. Presumably
my ding-dong.
In an area that you don't want electrocution. Maybe. No judgment.
Yeah.
To the recreational TENS unit users in our audience. No shade. Enjoy what you enjoy. I'm not here to yuck any yums between consenting adults.
Yeah.
But this person was not happy about it.
So she's going to bring down the hammer on this whole establishment. And then Corwin gives her a very thoughtful gift. Or at least he thought a lot about it. I don't know that it's thoughtful.
The foam bat of affirmations. This felt like it would have been something Stuart Smiley from SNL had.
Because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
This is absurd. You hit yourself with this bat. It is the most bottom thing I've ever seen in my life.
That's definitely Corwin, though, right?
Oh, for sure.
Corwin's a bottom. 100%.
Oh, for sure, yeah. Corwin has big bottom energy.
Yeah.
Lockley's like, thanks, but I'll just take my aggression out the old-fashioned way, tying people up and hitting them with a
strap of, I don't know. She's a top. I don't know. I lost the thread on that.
Yeah, no, she's got this. She does not need Corwin's big bottom energy.
No,
she is not interested in this.
So Bryson's in his quarters just rewiring stuff all over the place, trying to make the ball talk to him. He sees some kind of alien face inside the ball.
Yeah, he's fucking around with this thing. He's got some equipment. He's trying some stuff out. And we cut in between this and Zach going to the hollow brothel.
Yeah.
The owner insists that they are legal and on the level. So there's like a little shot in the background here that I just want to call out real quick
This
scene. There's a face. A guy gets handed one of the like sex electrical suits.
Mm-hmm.
And he like makes the most confused face I think I've ever seen in cinema. And it is just perfect. He's like, wait, so I put this on and it jerks me off? And he manages to convincingly portray that sentence with a single facial expression.
Beautiful. Magnificent.
Chef's kiss.
Somebody get this man an award.
Yeah. Zach even brings up the use of photographs to make models. And the owner insists that this is somehow not illegal because it's a private venue. It's okay to steal someone's identity as long as I'm not doing publicly.
Like, okay. This gets all extra weird now in our context of like AI deep fake porn. Like, oh my God. Like this is legitimately scary. And I'm impressed that we were approaching it with this, with a whole B plot in a TV movie at this point in time. What year was this? 90 what, you know?
8, I want to say. Maybe 9.
Like, very prescient. And something we're still grappling with today. Like, we did not figure this out in the intervening years.
Oh, we have not figured this out, no.
We've fucked up real bad.
So, I mean, deepfake technology as a whole is like, I mean, there are its uses in pornography. There are its uses in politics.
Yeah. Both scary.
That was a really interesting subplot on an episode of The Orville, if you've watched that.
I have not watched that much. I've watched a couple of episodes only.
They visit a planet during an election, and there's a bunch of deepfake stuff of one of the people saying a bunch of terrible things that are totally against what everything that they've said and believe in. Mm-hmm. And everyone there is just very like, oh, yeah, they just do this stuff as part of their political campaigning. Some people buy it. And I'm just like,
And welcome to 2024, everyone.
Right. How long do you think we have until the first presidential? You think it probably won't be a presidential ad. It'll probably be a local ad for like a local congressman or senator or something. Happens that uses AI to make someone say something that they don't believe.
I hope that, I think it's going to happen. But
do you think
I
it's going to happen this election cycle that's coming up, or do you think we're going to get it in 2 years? Because it's going to be that soon.
I think it could be this one, like very realistically could be this one. And I would hope that we are still, some of us, vigilant enough to figure it out, call it out, point it out. I hope it's not.
I wish I had that much faith in the education and critical thinking abilities of the American public. But we've managed to systematically destroy that ability over the past 40 years by crippling our education system and removing fairness doctrine from the FCC. So, you know, normal heavy stuff for Babylon 5 on a Sunday morning for us.
Happy Sunday.
Happy Sunday.
So I do like that Zach, you know, he doesn't know all the legalese and stuff that the owner's trying to throw at him, but he does know if he says the words faulty and dangerous loud enough that some people will leave.
Yeah. That's that Garibaldi homeschool security coming
in. You know what? That's actually pretty good. I'm going to give him props for that one. So in his quarters, Dr. Bryson is like playing with fire and summons the power of who are you? He says our line.
He does. He falls asleep at his desk after summoning a ghost, linking the orb to the station power grid for a moment, thus beginning, quotes, the spoopy shit.
Love it.
Speaking of spoopy, a lawyer comes for Lockley. Restraining order, suing, all kinds of stuff.
Blah, blah, blah.
This is the biggest bad guy we've got on Babylon 5.
The lawyers.
What a piece of shit this lawyer is.
Ugh, he's gross. All of this seems to be extremely dubious legal ground, considering this is like a military installation. Mm-hmm. Like, I know that there's been a lot of like, oh, it's a diplomacy and it's its own thing, but it's like Earth Force military is still in charge.
I have to wonder how much of this is influenced by Joe's legal troubles that he, I believe he had around this time / right before. I'd have to look up production dates and when things happen because it's all in the past and it all kind of blends together. But I have to feel like this is directly inspired by personal experience for him.
Oh, definitely. Right. He's
He's just shitting on this lawyer who's just wrong. Specifically wrong about who owns what.
Yeah, right. Garibaldi goes to see Bryson. He wants his notes. Yeah. Bryson looks really bad. And he apparently
had a rough night.
He apparently just like took a bunch of acid and burned his notes. He's out there.
Yeah. Bryson refuses funding at this point. And then throws Garibaldi out of his room. Zach and Lockley discuss the lawsuit. Garibaldi tells them he's off when the Soul Hunter shows up. Zach starts coughing like he's sick at the best fucking time. It's like someone here is going to die. It's so good.
He's a nervous cougher, you know?
Yeah.
Some of us do stuff with our hands, but Zach just starts coughing.
And then President Bartlett gives the stalest speech of his political career.
Ugh. Now, I remember this was definitely in the Discord that someone suggested that if you look at this portrayal of the Soul Hunter as done by Martin Sheen, as like the Soul Hunter is learning English as he's speaking it, that it comes across a little better. And I was like, okay, that's very generous. I don't know that I can do this.
It definitely feels that way. It definitely improves over the course of the episode. Mm-hmm. And if that was an acting decision, it was a fun and interesting one solely for Martin Sheen and not for our audience.
Yeah, it was not telegraphed sufficiently that we could tell that's what
one
he's trying
line,
to do.
I'm learning your language. Like, just says something, struggles, sorry, I'm learning your language. That's all we need. Mm-hmm. That's it. One line. It's not hard. It's a couple seconds of film. There are a couple seconds we could cut out at a number of places in this.
I mean, even if you don't want to say something, you could have him like have expressions, like tilting the head, listening for a long time. Like, I don't know. It didn't work for me.
Yeah. He's tracked the stolen orb here. Lockley questions how he could possibly know. And he pulls out his all-sheen eye to reveal the soul of the guy with the fakest German accent since World War II propaganda films.
Oh, yeah, yeah. One of the teammates is now in a soul ball.
Yeah. To be credit, this actor, they later play a German officer in The Man with the High Castle.
Oh,
and
neat.
I did watch a clip of him doing his German accent there, and it is sufficiently more convincing.
Congrats.
So I don't know if he just gets typecast because he didn't appear to be German from the stuff I read. Mm-hmm. So
he just does a good fake German accent now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the Soul Hunter tells us that in this ball is the whole planet of Rauga.
Yeah. I don't know if the Rauga is the planet name or the species name or both.
Yeah. I took it as the planet name, but it could be either or both.
Yeah. Yeah, an entire species in a single orb. Bryson is on the move. The souls have convinced him to destroy the station rather than be recaptured by Captain Willard. And the lawyer drops by Lockley's office to pressure her into settling. Nothing screams, I've got a strong legal case, quite like, let's settle a day after I hand you your subpoena.
Yeah, good point. Yeah, I mean, here's the thing, like, about our legal system is that lawyers will say, you know, if this goes to trial, we have a good chance of winning, but we're going to rack up so much in legal fees that it doesn't matter, so you might as well just settle.
Yeah.
And that's weird thing to happen.
Mm-hmm. I mean, also, it's just like, it's in the lawyer's best interest to make as much money in the shortest time as possible.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's a weird...
No shortage of legal cases.
Yeah. Short-term self-interest. So,
yep.
I don't know. But we get some, like, back and forth where Garibaldi's being shitty about the I don't believe in souls stuff. We find out Zach believes in heaven. Lockley doesn't care. Neither of those things matter because this vessel belongs to them. So we just got to get the thing back to them.
Lovejoy hooks the orb up in whatever random area of the station utilities he's in, and it lets shit loose all over the station. Speaking of loose all over, over in the Hollow Brothel, a client was pretty sure he didn't ask for a cucking. Once again, no judgment, listeners. when he goes to report the issue, we see our Hollow Gigolo has programmed Lockley into the brothel as well.
This part is very tired for me because we had this similar thing on DS9 where we also put Nana Visitor through this whole thing of like, well, people just really want to see your hot bod. We gotta have a reason.
A woman's in command of the station. Let's let everyone sexualize her against her will.
Yep.
Oh, gotta do that.
Yep.
Fucking this, 90s.
This screamed, this is for TNT, right? Like, we're doing this because we cast Tracy Scoggins because she was hot for TNT, and we haven't had her naked yet. Like, we didn't do that in the whole season.
Oops, forgot to do it in the show, so.
Yeah. Let's put her in some lingerie and sex her hair up real tall. It's the 90s.
My HD remaster made it look like I'm guessing she was wearing some kind of like leotard or like some leggings of some variety, but the way the color smoothing worked out, there was no lines anywhere, and I thought
no.
She was just bottomless and a Barbie doll.
Yeah, no, it was like
is what it looked like.
Yeah, it was
like
a bustier.
I had
to
like pause it and be all like, "What the fuck is going on here?" and Beth was sitting next to me because I'm just all like, "There's something wrong with the image."
Yeah,
like something weird has happened here in the version that I was watching.
Yeah,
because it was just bizarre.
It was like a light colored bustier and very small, you know, bikini bottom.
And then so. All the stuff's loose throughout the station now. The Hollows are running wild, and we get this alien Grim Reaper thing to a Scream Cut commercial that is never referenced nor explained again.
Yeah.
Is this the machinations of the ghosts in the Soul Orb, which somehow have a Grim Reaper, culturally speaking, or is this programmed into the Hollow Brothel for... someone's really specific weird thing, which once again, no judgment, monster fuckers, but I don't understand the Grim Reaper thing.
Yeah. The Hollow Brothel just wants to make its money. Like, they'll program whatever you want.
Oh, yeah.
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 So Lockley has grabbed herself some Arby's at the commercial break. Yeah. She has the best food choices in this show. We have called out before the amount of sugar and like milk and stuff she puts in her coffee. Mm-hmm. And she gets her Arby's. She's got a cool squiggly straw in her Jamocha milkshake or whatever. And
I gotta talk about this crazy straw.
She opens up her beef and cheddar and like pours salt just all over this fast food burger. It's amazing.
Also, it looked like a chicken sandwich, despite her saying it's a hamburger that she knows isn't a hamburger.
Luckily, Tracy Scoggins was just having a hell of a time with all the food things she was given.
Mm-hmm. So this straw, Vic, co-host over on Last Time On, has a pre-pod tradition of having a smoothie before we record.
I've heard about this, yes.
And he has this like dollar store glass that is this like incredible crazy straw built into the glass that he'll drink it out of sometimes. And it felt a lot like this.
Big Vic energy, yeah.
Right.
She actually has like a respectful conversation with the Soul Hunter as she's having her snacky snack.
Yeah, the elusive man's just waiting in her room playing with a toy boat.
Captain's trinkets.
Mm-hmm. And they talk about what happens, you know, like just being a soul. I'm just a soul in an orb, sitting here in the Great Hall.
The respectful conversation gets interrupted when the power goes out.
Yeah.
The souls have like broken through the power systems. They are clearly trying to threaten the Soul Hunter with like electricity. He urges Lockley to escape because he knows they want him. They're mad at the Soul Hunters, not the humans.
Yeah.
And she throws herself in front of it because she's super good.
Yeah, she saves Uncle Ben from the danger here in his rush to Med Lab. She's having an out-of-body experience as she flatlines when she gets pulled into the soul orb, where Franklin is waiting for her in a life-size version of the Cones of Dunshire.
Are the cones a metaphor? Well, yes and no.
So, I've got problems here.
We clearly just needed to, we had like a contract that Richard Biggs had to be in this movie.
Yeah. He didn't get to be in third space, so we're going to make sure he gets in this one.
Yeah.
And this is the part he gets, like, clearly so much thought is going into the Franklin character in these movies that he's got such a clearly well-defined place.
Yeah.
Okay. Also, so the not Franklin here, faux Franklin. Folklin. I'll workshop it somewhere. Anyways, he tells Lockley that we pulled you here, we shocked you to so that we could talk, right? That's not what happened.
Yeah.
She jumped in front of that shit.
Yeah. Are they saying they knew she would do that? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. There's a
also,
lot there that.
This should have been Zoe, right?
Right.
Like, Zoe's actually dead. We found out in Day of the Dead that she was very important and formative for Captain Lockley. Like, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
It would make more sense even if it was just Corwin.
Yeah, because, like, Corwin's a big part of her existence now, sure. These souls are, half of them are, like, insane. They've gone mad. They're raging about being in this ball. And you can tell because they've got their own island that's covered in storms.
Oh, it's so dark over there. They're all so sad and crazy and also thunderstorms.
Yeah, yeah.
We made the people who are tortured go to the part of the island that is thunderstorms.
Yeah, yeah. The aliens also say, like, we weren't dying. Because it was earlier in the movie, it was like something was going to happen to them and they were all going to be gone. So the Soul Hunters went and saved the whole planet at once. And they're like, we weren't dying. We were doing the evolving. We were doing the thing where we give up our bodies and become pure energy beings. So, oops, big oops from the Soul Hunters.
It's been 10,000 years in this orb now. Good job, Soul Hunters. Speaking of which, a ton of Soul Hunter ships come through to arrive at the station. And Corwin is literally just like, fuck it, light them up.
Yeah, go Corbin.
How many? Just start attacking, whatever. We don't see any space battle, but he gives the order to just open fire on these ships. And nothing comes of it. It's never referenced again. The Soul Hunter tells Lockley this is the first time anyone has saved any of their lives.
Wow.
It just feels like it would have happened on accident in the tens of thousands of years of space travel that they have.
Yeah.
She tells him that there was a mistake, that they were about to evolve, not perish. And then just, like, gets back to doing her job.
Yeah.
No Lockley. PTO plan. No sick days from Earth Force.
Yeah. Lockley's a badass. She's going to get this stuff done.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I believe that there's a bubble bath in her future, though.
Yeah.
So the Soul Hunter is pretty upset about this idea that perhaps we made a big boo-boo. He takes it serious.
Yes.
So he's going to try to buy some time to find the souls and get the device.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and so Lockley starts heading to Brown 11, which I believe is where the Hollow Brothel is, or we're nearby, something like that.
Yeah.
And
Zach and Garibaldi are digging around for Al when they run into the Hollow Brothel guy, who thinks that this is all just to fuck with him.
Right. Yeah, he thinks that this is all about him.
Nothing bad has ever happened on Babylon 5.
Corwin nonchalantly at some point mentions that there are atypical readings from the reactor. Totally normal, not bad at all. And then, oopsie, I guess there's like a river of souls coming from the Hollow Brothel to the Hollow Brothel. Not totally sure which way it's going.
Yeah. They're gathering at the Hollow Brothel, I guess, so the river would be flowing into the Hollow Brothel.
Sure.
Anyways, we see Hollow Lockley, and Zach reacts correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And Garibaldi maintains his title as the fucking worst.
I literally wrote down right here, Garibaldi is the fucking worst.
Hal Lockley is their leader and gets to give the big speech in the hallway as Metallica's Kill 'Em All plays in the background. Lockley grenades the Hollow Brothel to disconnect the Epitomus River of Souls. She knows their plan is to blow up the station and the Soul Hunters will be no help.
Yeah.
They're just going to hang out and wait for this shit to settle and then grab their orb and peace.
Well, you know, I mean, if they blow up the station, also there's a whole bunch of Soul Hunters just hanging around. Are they just like, hey, we can get whatever souls we need to out of here too as everything blows up? Like, it'll be fine.
They only collect important people, Laura.
Yeah, but we could think that possibly they might have their eye on Lockley or maybe Garibaldi, but we know that's
probably
not true.
Probably not Garibaldi, no.
The show would like us to think that maybe Garibaldi. But we know better on this podcast.
It's true. Bryson is like attuning with the orb. They can't stop it with guns, so the Soul Hunter offers to sacrifice himself and join them in the orb to build the bridge and show that he's true to his word. That he will help them find a way to free themselves of the orb and stuff. All these things that the Soul Hunters are totally not going to do because they've shown time and time again that they don't take Martin Sheen's Soul Hunter seriously. They don't give a fuck what he says.
Yeah.
He is baby to them. We don't care.
Right.
Yeah. And that basically just wraps up everything very, very quickly. Martin Sheen sacrifices himself. The orb is returned to the Soul Hunters, who will have to deal with it. And that's effectively the end of this plot of the Soul Hunters. They're just like, okay, they got their orb back and they're piecing. And maybe Martin Sheen's sacrifice will mean something. Maybe there will be consequences for Ian McShane stealing and then also just being weird and endangering the station. All left TBD.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get a button on the episode in Lockley's office where the B-plot wraps up. by the lawyer getting told to go fuck himself, and he gets paid with Corwin's bat, but modified for his clear shame kink. So, yeah.
Beautiful. And then we get weird jazz at the end. Like, instead of the Babylon 5 theme or something, it's just like weird jazz to credits.
Right.
Oh, man.
This fucking movie.
Yeah. You said before we got on pod, I believe, that you had remembered this movie as worse than it was.
Yeah. I thought this movie was as bad as Third Space. This movie is not good. Don't mistake my comments for thinking that it is good, but it was better than Third Space.
Yeah. I remembered this movie as better than it was.
Okay.
I didn't really remember anything about this movie at all, but I just remember being like, oh, I don't think it was bad. I just didn't like it that much.
Yeah. Well, we do have a scale for such things. And I think we rated the other B-Fi movies on this scale as well.
I think
so
we did, yeah.
Whatever, it's do what we fucking want. It's our podcast.
Yeah.
So how do you feel on a scale of Babylon's 1 to 5 about this film?
I got to give it like 2.5. Like
2.5?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, Third Space, I know Third Space wasn't good. And you had stronger feelings about that than I think I did. Mm-hmm. But, like, for me, at least Third Space, I remember it actually making me feel spooked when I was younger. Like, it being actually spooky to me and interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's tough. This plot is tough. The Hollow Brothel brought up lots of negative feelings in me from...
As it should. Yeah.
From just, like, having watched these things when I was a young girl, like I was a teenager, mm-hmm. and it just sucks to see things that affect you more than someone else written by the person who is the someone else, like, you know, the patriarchal dominant gender playing your kinds of experiences for laughs. Like, I don't know, I not a big fan of that, even when they get their comeuppance in the end. I don't know. It's not fun for me.
Yeah. I think this episode wants to say something important and smart about what is individual sovereignty, mm-hmm. and how far does it extend? Does it extend past your life? Does it extend past your personal au revoir and usage?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is your face yours? And if it is, what does that mean? I think this episode wants to say a bunch of interesting things about that. It does not manage to do that in any meaningful way.
Not for me.
I have to, like, these questions are fun. Well, they're not fun, but they're interesting to talk about.
Sure.
I enjoy sitting here talking to you about it. But they are not things that are presented in a way where you are meant to, like, the closest thing we get to a point counterpoint is Zach being a good person and Garibaldi being a skeez.
Yes. Garibaldi is a big skeez in here. There's like one point in the elevator after he's seen Hollow Lockley that he's like clearly undressing real Lockley with his eyes.
Yeah.
And he's like, what the fuck? And he's supposed to be one of the like trusted patriarchal characters in this show. And I'm just like, fuck off. Fuck off.
Yeah. I can't give this episode credit or this movie credit for things that it doesn't do but wants to do.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is why it's just a 2. Like, there's any redeeming qualities about it are redeeming qualities that I am retroactively forcing upon it because I think of the dichotomy between the A plot and the B plot as interesting. Not that either are good, but I think the dichotomy between the two is interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then anything else is stuff that was like brought up in the Discord is like, oh, well, it's this and oh, well, it's this. And it's like, I can appreciate that stuff when it's part of the material. Mm-hmm. I can give it credit for those things when it's part of the material. But when it's just, and I say this as lovingly as possible, nerds bending over backwards to make the stuff that they like more likable.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 1,000% guilty of this, to be absolutely clear. it makes it difficult for me to give it credit for those things.
Yeah.
So.
And maybe there's a meta joke in there about, you know, we still have to have our strong female characters be young and hot in the 90s. Like, they still have mm-hmm. to be in a certain mold. Like, for as diverse as Babylon 5 has tried to be, all the women still fit in a very, you know, size 6, 5, 8, certain measurements mold.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they're making a bit of a meta joke about that by, you know, putting Tracy Scoggins in the bustier and sexing up her hair. Maybe they are trying to poke fun at it, but it's not obvious enough. It still plays exactly like everything, every other time we've done this joke in the 90s.
Yeah.
So I just over it.
Yep. Well, we're done with it.
Yeah.
And yeah. we can move on to next week, another movie. We've got Babylon 5, The Road Home.
Yay. The newest Babylon 5.
Yep.
Travel across the galaxy with John Sheridan as he unexpectedly finds himself transported through multiple timelines and alternate realities in a quest to find his way back home. Along the way, he reunites with some familiar faces while discovering cosmic new revelations about the history, purpose, and meaning of the universe.
I'm looking forward to watching this again. I watched it at the premiere. I've watched it at home once, mm-hmm. and it's been at least 7 months since I've seen it. I think coming after Sleeping in Light, it's going to be interesting to view it under that lens.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to it.
Me too.
Just like I'm also looking forward to saying thank you to Jeremy Siegel. Hey, Jeremy. How are you? Thanks so much for writing our theme music. Really appreciate it. You can find more of Jeremy's work at jeremysiegel42.bandcamp.com or on streaming services as Nuclear Jaguar.
And thank you to Angry Deck Time Machine on Instagram for our podcast artwork.
Aaron, thanks so much for editing the podcast and taking out the 15 minutes I had to crawl into my attic to see if there was a critter taking a shit above me. Really appreciate that.
And thank you to you, the listener, for being here with us today. We really appreciate it. We'd love it if you reach out to us at whoareyoub5@gmail.com or join us on our Discord and start sharing in the chat.
We'll see you next week, Internet.
Bye.
Oh, you're still here, listener. You're probably thinking to yourself, those thunderstorms were caused by the angry minds. The people that are crazy were making that bad weather. They didn't send them to the place where the bad weather was. We know. You don't have to tell us.